This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. My co-host Anthony Brooks is on assignment today. A federal grand jury has handed down a 30-count indictment against suspected marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. The charges include conspiracy and use of a weapon of mass destruction. It also alleges that Tsarnaev left a confession in the Watertown boat where he was captured, saying, "I don't like killing innocent people." U.S. Attorney Carmen Ortiz is holding a press conference at the Moakley Federal Courthouse at exactly this moment. WBUR has a reporter there, and we will bring you further details from our reporter the moment that press conference wraps up. So stay tuned for that. But for now, let's turn to another high-profile criminal case, that of former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez. He's been charged with the murder of semi-professional football player Odin Lloyd. Hernandez appeared for a bail hearing today. Yesterday, prosecutors laid out their case in extraordinary detail, and here's how Bristol County DA William McCauley described how Hernandez allegedly returned home shortly after Lloyd was shot to death at an industrial park in North Attleboro.
At 3:30 in the morning when he arrived at his home, this surveillance footage captures him and his two Confederates exiting the vehicle. He spent some time fishing around at the driver's side compartment, as he's been the driver, and one of the individuals in the back gets out of the car and visibly is seen on the video that he's also carrying a firearm. They go into the house. The defendant goes walking through the house with a gun in his hand. That's captured on the video. It's the same black semi-automatic firearm, appears to be a larger caliber, and they all then go down to the basement. Once in the basement, the surveillance gets shut off.
That was DA William McCauley describing the allegations against Aaron Hernandez yesterday at his arraignment. Now, as we know, the Patriots dropped Hernandez from their roster. They had signed him to in 2010 and then re-signed him to a five-year, $40 million deal last year. Now, on the field, Hernandez performed well, but there had been questions about his character even before New England recruited him. So what does all of this mean for the Patriots, a team that has prided itself on being a different type of NFL franchise, one that doesn't tolerate miscreants on the roster? And a bigger question, what does this mean for the NFL recruiting process as a whole, if anything, and more broadly about the way we in society lionize our gridiron heroes? What are your thoughts about all of that? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now first to talk about all this is Ben Volin. He's the NFL reporter for the Boston Globe. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me today.
So give us the latest. What happened in the bail hearing for Aaron Hernandez today?
That's right. He just had a bail hearing. Just ended a few minutes ago. He was denied bail. Pretty common for someone charged with first-degree murder. They determined that given the seriousness of the charges and that he certainly has the financial means to flee, that he would be a flight risk. So no surprise there to see that. He was denied bail today, and he'll be staying in jail for a long time until this trial takes its course, obviously. The prosecutors, they present more evidence. There was a photo that the website TMZ came up with last night showing Aaron Hernandez taking a self photo on Instagram. I think it was from back in 2009 when he was in college, him holding a Glock handgun. They believe that might even be the murder weapon that he used, that they're alleging, of course. And, it's just not a good look for Aaron Hernandez right now. His defense attorneys say that it's really just circumstantial evidence, and the judge agreed, saying that it does seem to be a bit of a circumstantial case because they don't have the murder weapon and they don't have any direct witnesses. However, the judge said it's a very strong circumstantial case, and it's going to be tough considering all the surveillance evidence they have of Aaron and his whereabouts. It's going to be hard for the defense to prove that Aaron was somewhere else on that night because of all the circumstantial evidence.
Right, to the point where it's alleged that shell casings were even found in the rental car that he had at the time. There's also been some reports I'm seeing of developments of other crimes that Hernandez may have an association with.
Yeah, this is all alleged at this point, but now that he's in custody, authorities believe he may actually be connected. They're investigating him right now about an unsolved double murder that happened in the South End last year, which would have taken place actually a week before training camp began in July. And authorities actually were reporting in the Globe today, they believe that actually the victim this time, Odin Lloyd, might actually have had knowledge about the double slaying last year, and that this all may be tied together. So it's getting really messy for Aaron Hernandez. I think the prosecution is going to have a tough time with the motive right now. The motive seems a little flimsy. All they're going with right now is that Odin Lloyd was speaking and conversing with a group of people in a nightclub a couple Fridays ago that Aaron Hernandez didn't like that much, and now they're trying to say that that led to an execution-style murder. That seems a bit flimsy. Certainly, if Odin Lloyd had information about a double slaying last year, that could maybe bolster the prosecution's case. Right now, as we said, it is a little circumstantial, but it is a very strong case still against Aaron Hernandez.
Right. So, Ben, yesterday the Pats dropped Hernandez basically without a second thought from the roster, saying it was the right thing to do. Have the Patriots said anything else in the ensuing 24 hours?
Publicly, that's all they've said. They came out with a statement. They expressed tremendous regret that someone with the organization would be involved in something so heinous. They expressed sympathy towards the victim and his family. And then they ended it by saying this was simply the right thing to do. And I spoke with a couple members of the organization yesterday, and they reiterated that. I wrote in the Globe today that actually waiving Hernandez as swiftly as they did wasn't the smartest and most prudent move. If really the Patriots wanted to do the best thing for the team, they would have let the NFL suspend Aaron Hernandez first, which obviously would have happened. Then they would have had easy courses of action in terms of recovering some money they've already paid to him, voiding the future guarantees in his contract, getting salary cap relief. And actually, by cutting him yesterday, they may have complicated matters a lot. They might not have these easy avenues to recover some of that money. But at the same time, this wasn't about money. This was about doing the right thing. And Aaron Hernandez, even as talented as he is on the field, the Patriots decided as soon as there was an arrest in this case, whether it was for something as serious as murder or relatively light, as an obstruction of justice charge, they were going to release him. And they did as soon as he was led away in handcuffs yesterday. 90 mm-hmm. minutes later, he was off the team. They just felt it was the right thing to do. Cost be damned, he had lost his right to represent
right.
the Patriots.
So, Ben, this leads us to the big question, one of the big questions that we want to wrestle with in this part of the show, and that is that, for lack of a better metaphor, this may be a terrible kind of Monday morning quarterbacking, looking back and saying, well, if there were questions about Hernandez's original character, why did the Pat sign him to begin with, et cetera, et cetera. But let's step away from that. You're the NFL reporter for the Boston Globe. Do you think that the story of Aaron Hernandez and where we find ourselves right now says anything, good or bad, about this, the vaunted Patriots way of running a team and character being one of the things that they value or publicly value most of all in terms of who the New England Patriots are?
Sure. The Patriot way is something that Robert Kraft and the Kraft family have certainly spent a lot of time talking about and promoting for the last 20 years since they've owned the team. And it is great PR, and the Patriots do, don't get me wrong, many wonderful things in the community. The Patriots, players, the organization, they do lots of great things all over the region. But, let's not pretend that these are a bunch of choir boys either, and their main goal is to win football games. And that's what Bill Belichick, who's in charge of the roster, that's what he's mostly concerned about at this point. You can have a team full of choir boys, but if you go 7-9, no one's going to be happy. It's all about winning football games. And Bill Belichick over the years has felt like he has the structure in his locker room and in his organization, and he's got good veterans in the locker room like Tom Brady that they can take on some of these troubled players and keep them in line, keep them out of trouble, and make them productive football players. Now, this thing with Hernandez goes far beyond the scope of what anyone could have predicted. I mean, the Patriots have brought on their share of miscreants over the years. Guys like Chad Ochocinco, Albert Haynesworth. They had another player, Alfonso Dennard, who had a trial out in Nebraska this offseason. But no one could have predicted Aaron Hernandez would be involved in a murder case.
Right.
I mean, this goes so far beyond the scope of your typical NFL arrest. I think what it will do, Bill Belichick, like I said, has taken on a lot of these risky character risk type players, but they haven't always worked out. And frankly, a lot of them have kind of backfired lately, and they haven't been these great productive football players. Now with this Hernandez thing, I just expect that the Patriots are going to take a lot more look into these players' backgrounds and how seriously do they take their profession and can they stay away from trouble off the field. Certainly, I think they're going to be taking fewer character risks moving forward because this thing certainly blew up in their face.
Yeah. Well, listeners, we're talking about the ongoing story of Aaron Hernandez and the bigger picture about what it means for the Patriots and the way the Pats run the team there, and also about how we view our sports heroes, our football heroes. Do we as society have any role to play here when it comes to the way we lionize gridiron heroes? What do you make of the Aaron Hernandez story so far? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a quick call here. Todd is calling from Beverly. You're on the air, Todd.
Thank you, Magna. I think that you hit it on the head in your opening, and people can't just turn a blind eye to this because we worship these players, whether they're football players, hockey players, you name it, or entertainers in general. Let's just call them entertainers, and we'll turn a blind eye to small infractions, and they eventually build up to where I heard someone quoted today that he didn't know how he expected to get away with something like this.
Mm-hmm.
I think entertainers expect to get away with things because we prop them up so much across the board, and every time someone pays a crazy amount of money to wear a jersey or to go to a game, they're voting with their dollars and they're lifting these players up more and they think they can get away with this.
Todd, thank you so much for your call. Ben, stand by for just a second. I want to turn now to Dan Leibowitz. He's the executive director of the Sport and Society program at Northeastern University. He's joining me in the studio. Dan, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So Todd actually put us square in the heart of the conversation that I want to have. What do you make of what Todd says, that in a way, you know, fans and the way we're willing to spend money and lionize these players has something to do with the bigger picture of player misbehavior?
Well, you know, this is basically a conversation that is in this context has been limited to the NFL, and yet, you know, I hate to look at it just in the structure of the NFL or in sports in general. I'd like to look at it in a larger construct of what is the construct of manhood in that we have in our country worldwide, the way we acculturate boys and women in the country, and particularly how much we bow down to celebrity, not just in sport, but in politics and industry and everywhere else. And so the conversation needs to be, have we tacitly approved behaviors, and then we're sort of act aghast when they happen.
Okay, so let me ask you about that, because in the Globe, they've quoted Artrell Hawkins, who was with the Patriots in 2005, 2006, and he told the Globe that while obviously Aaron Hernandez is an extreme case, and he did point to the culture of the NFL and how it plays a role in how some players might, you know, go off the rails, so to speak, because the players are very physically developed, he says, but not emotionally or socially from the time they enter college, and they're really attuned to the gladiator mentality and therefore also come with a sense of entitlement. I mean, what's your response to that?
Well, I think that, you know, pro football or football in general or a lot of sports are basically hyper-masculine, right? And so, again, it goes back to what is our definition of manhood and masculinity? I think that, you know, what is that definition and how is it woven into the social fabric of everything that we do? You know, we don't start at a young age talking to boys about kindness, compassion, respect for women, a variety of other issues. And so we've kind of boiled manhood down to I can beat you up or I can knock you down on a field or I can make sure that, you know, I'm dominant over you. So if everything is a power dynamic both on and off a field, in a in sports which have been hyper-masculinized, particularly at the pro level, it's somewhat disingenuous to be surprised by that.
Ben Volin, you're the NFL reporter for the Boston Globe. I understand that the NFL is holding its annual symposium this week. Where, I mean, what do they talk to players about in the symposium?
Yeah, they bring every year they do this. They bring all the drafted rookies, about 255 players or so, up to Ohio for a few days of a symposium. As you said, they listen to speakers, former players, some health experts, mental health experts, and it's all about teaching them what it means to be a professional. You're not in the coddled world of universities anymore. You're a professional. This thing is, you know, the average career is 3 years in the NFL. You're going to be, you know, the NFL stands for not for long, basically, and you need to start preparing for your future after football and what it means to be a high-profile NFL player now.
What does that mean in particular? Because, I mean, Dan Leibowitz he gave us a whole list of issues about masculinity and a person's position in society. I mean, do they get to that level of detail in a place like the NFL Symposium? Because, you know, like it or not, these players are heroes to so many young men and women.
Yeah, you know, there's a difference there. You know, they're heroes in the sense that they score touchdowns and they make us feel great because they help our teams win championships and such. But again, anyone who's looking to these players for moral guidance, you know, to me, that's what the parents are for. Charles Barkley said it best 30 years ago, I'm not a role model. Just because a guy can score a touchdown does not mean that we should look up to him as a way to live our life or anything. I mean, I love sports and I love these athletes, but I've never looked to my sports heroes for a way to live my life. And so if we're going to blame these athletes for not being role models, to me, again, it all falls on the parenting and who's actually showing these people who are the proper role models for them to be following. You know, again, at this symposium, it's just about, look, when you're on social media, anything you say, it's in the public domain now, and you have to be careful.
Right.
And you have to save your money because, you know, these paychecks aren't going to be around forever. And they're just trying to warn these guys, and they bring back former players, mm-hmm. guys who have gotten in their own trouble to kind of relay their own experiences. So it's not just, you know, the university community who gets involved. They get the peer-to-peer mentoring at this symposium, and there's only so much they can do. No one could have seen...
Okay,
you know,
let me turn that back to Dan, because I take your point, Ben, that there's, you know, you can't actually necessarily solve every problem or prepare a player for every eventuality, but Dan, what do you think of what Ben said about, you know, maybe we shouldn't be looking at players as heroes, and that it's up to parents to really sort of create an intellectual distance between how kids may see these players and how they do right now?
I think it's awfully hard for parents to do that. It's almost as if, you know, I understand Ben's point, but kids aren't compartmentalized at home. So, you know, they're social media is hitting them. Regular media is hitting them. They're watching the NFL on TV. They watch. There's sort of this interplay or intersection between, you know, music, entertainment, celebrity, sports. It's sort of constant. And so whether we're talking about Beyonce or whether we're talking about pro football players or whether we're talking about Kim Kardashian, and we can argue that Kim Kardashian shouldn't be sort of a figure of female empowerment in many respects. And yet the culture is constantly coming at young individuals, right? And so beyond the parents, it's almost an assumption that the developmental mind, the young developmental mind, is going to be able to be mature enough not to look at them, these players, as heroes or celebrities as heroes. And so I think that, you know, the league is trying to create a leadership structure in many respects. Goodell has a very strong discipline mentality for the league. I think the Krafts, majoritatively, they've had mistakes with miscreants before, but I think they've owned the team for 20 years. They've done a pretty good job creating a leadership model and sort of weaving that throughout the community of the entire New England region and a model franchise nationally. So, you know, I think that this is a conversation where what does a social fabric look like? How many different ingredients or essential ingredients go into that social fabric? And what are we doing around leadership education, both in schools and the out-of-school networks and in sport-based youth development and elsewhere, to educate kids to make better decisions? And part of this is, you know, Aaron Hernandez is 23 years old.
Right.
He's a kid that didn't make a lot of good decisions. And where did that go awry? And what can we do about it?
Let's take a quick call here. Owen is calling from Dorchester. You're on the air, Owen.
Hi. So my question is, if innocent until proven guilty is the American way, are the Patriots being un-American by firing this guy before he's convicted?
Interesting question, Owen. Ben, what's your thought on that?
No, not at all. The only person who's obligated to presume innocence is the United States government. And a private entity like the Patriots, the NFL, have no obligation to stand behind a guy who's charged with first-degree murder. It's a terrible look, obviously, for the organization. If I was charged with this, the Boston Globe would drop me in a heartbeat, and I have no rights. Now, the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he committed this crime, and that's, you know, certainly the American way. But as far as private businesses, no, they did absolutely what they should have done.
Ben, let me ask you something. I have to admit, there's a lot that I didn't know about the recruitment process in the NFL that's been revealed through, you know, your reporting and others in the past couple of days, which totally fascinated me. Because, you know, it's one thing for the Patriots to, of course, now be completely understandable that they're going to drop a player who's been indicted for murder. But on the other hand, from what I understand, there's an extensive amount of background checks that are done, personal interviews, even multiple times, not with just with the players, but with their coaches and with their circle of friends and other fellow players before they make it through the long process of actually being tapped by an NFL team to become a player. How detailed is this process? And, you know, I guess that leads to the other question of how is it possible that someone, again, I'm not doing the Monday morning quarterbacking, but if there are indications of trouble, how far along do they get through the process?
Sure. Each team does extensive background work on each of these prospects, and they do it over a course of months, even over a year sometimes for some of these guys. Each team hires, they have a whole security team of former police officers and detectives, guys who are now in the private sector, and all they do is run background checks. And after the college season ends in December and the draft's in April, so they have like a four-month window, they start interviewing the kids, and they know their parking ticket situation. They know everything about these kids. The thing with Aaron Hernandez, though, is, you know, the background checks on him, it turned up, yeah, he failed a bunch of drug tests for marijuana at the University of Florida, and the coaches there were worried about some of the players that, or some of the people that he'd been hanging out with off the field, some bad influences. But at the same time, he'd never really gotten in any legal trouble. He'd mm-hmm. been questioned in a couple of incidents, but no background check would have turned up much, because he had a clean rap sheet before this whole incident unfolded. So, you know, they kind of knew that he was a character risk, but you could never have predicted that he would turn to murder.
Right.
And it was just impossible to know these things. And like I said, all the background checks in the world wouldn't have even come up with anything along this nature. So you can be as diligent as you can, but you just never know with these guys.
I want to take one more call here. Matthew's calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Matthew.
Hi. Kind of speaking to that a little bit. I was just, you know, when I heard about this, one of the first things I thought was, you know, it's such a tragedy that, you know, a guy like Hernandez, who's 23 years old and, you know, developmentally, like, probably in a lot of ways still a kid, like, he, after signing this huge contract, you know, he's a star player with the Patriots, he essentially hit it big, how, you know, he clearly couldn't let go of, you know, the trappings of his old life. Like, you know, I have a friend who grew up in the town next to him in Connecticut, and he said it was pretty common knowledge that Hernandez and his brother, you know, gangbanged. And, you know, I won't speak to that, like, you know, the situation you're growing up in, but, you know, here he is now, a millionaire living in North Attleboro, and he can't let go of that life, and that's,
right.
You know, that's a tragedy, like...
Matthew, thank you so much for your call, because Dan Leibowitz, Matthew hits upon, I think, a really important point. And that is, and Ben's also mentioned this as well, that one thing that the industry of professional sports does is it takes young people who have dedicated their lives to this very narrow field of accomplishment. They make it, but then they don't necessarily have the tools or the skills or a circle of advisors around them to help them really deal with all the responsibilities that come with that. And, I mean, I feel like that's one of the big picture lessons here. I'm wondering what your response to Matthew is and that sense as to what responsibilities the leagues have to their players, if any.
Well, I actually liked Matthew's call a lot, especially when he used the word trappings, of sort of his background or, you know, the way in which he acculturated himself or grew up himself. So I guess to me, Matthew's call is more really about that. It's sort of an underscoring of that whole manhood point. You know, what do we define as manhood? And what are the trappings of our youth that define manhood in that way that make it so hard to let go of that? Because I think if you embrace an identity, it may not be a positive self-identity in the framework of everybody else looking at it, but in your sense of the word or sense of the world, it is a positive self-identity, and it's hard to let that go. So he used the phrase gangbanging, or he talked about, you know, just sort of the way that he comported himself. Again, I think it comes back to what we embrace as manhood, how he saw himself as a man, and the trappings of what he thought manhood was. He couldn't let go of those things if this is true, again. And, you know, I hate to convict him in the court of public opinion before it's all
right.
Said and done. But I think that's the failing, it's a failing of society in many respects. You know, a lot of players in the league, you know, probably faced an awful lot of disenfranchisement growing up. And so even if they were coddled in this one arena, they've experienced an awful lot of disenfranchisement in other parts of their life and in almost every other arena.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to say that it's... that we aren't, as a society, we have some issues around support of a number of people in disenfranchised situations is a mistake.
Oh, it's a mistake. Okay, I take your point. Dan Leibowitz, Executive Director of the Sport and Society Program at Northeastern University, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Ben Volin, NFL reporter for the Boston Globe. Ben, great to have you as well. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
Listeners, let us know what you think about the Aaron Hernandez story and all the issues that you heard in this discussion today. You can do that at radioboston.org. But for now, stick with us, because when we come back, we'll have the latest in the 30-count indictment handed down today against suspected marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.